This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons in Washington. Take a minute. Think about the shows you watch on television. Scan through them in your mind. Think about shows from the past and present. We'll wait. Chances are there's a police officer in at least one of them. Cops are everywhere, in podcasts, films, and TV. Bad boys, what you want, what you want, what you gonna do when Sheriff John Brown come for you? And by now, you might have heard that one of the longest-running cop shows of all time, aptly called Cops, and its cousin Live PD, have been canceled. Critics say these police reality shows distort how we view police brutality. They amplify and dramatize arrests and crimes being committed by black and brown people, and often take advantage of and disrespect people who are being arrested. But what about fictional shows? Your Law & Orders, The Wire, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and even Paw Patrol? Crime shows are television's most popular genre. According to the New York Times, they make up more than 60% of primetime drama programming on the big four broadcast networks. What do these shows tell us about police work and crime prevention? Are any of them accurate? Today, we'll focus mostly on television shows about policing. Joining us to talk about this is Henry Malofsky. He's a producer of the podcast series Running from Cops. Henry, welcome to 1A.
Hey, good to be here, Sasha.
And Soraya Nadia McDonald is a culture critic for The Undefeated. Good to have you back, Soraya.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Henry, I'll start with you. For Running from Cops, the podcast series that you worked on, your team watched and analyzed 846 episodes of the show. Is that right? And what was your goal there?
Yeah, so a team of us watched 846 episodes, and we broke down the segments on Cops, which are pretty much all interactions between a police officer and a suspect. And we broke down the race, the gender, the types of crimes, the locations, and we compared that data with the real-world data from the FBI's own uniform crime report. And our goal was just to kind of get a sense of, is Cops, which is purportedly a reality show, is it actually like the reality that we live in? And the answer was, not surprisingly, no. It's very different.
So, Soraya, help us out. For those who haven't actually seen the show Cops before, describe it to us.
Well, it usually
perfectly timed siren in your background there, or is that Henry's?
Oh, you can hear that.
Yes, we sure can. So, describe the reality TV show for us.
Sure. Well, it's usually comprised of several segments, and what happens is that police departments around the country enter into these agreements with the producers of Cops, or they used to before it was canceled, and so, you know, usually what you see obviously has been edited down, and you know, it's usually, you know, folks, you know, not at their best moments who are being pulled over.
Chases.
You know, heavily minority. Right.
Drug busts.
Right. Yeah. It's very, it's a really sort of heavily dramatized version of the reality of police work. Right. What we don't see is a lot of the sort of sitting around or the calls that, you know, are maybe important but aren't actually emergencies. You know, we don't see a lot of police showing up for, you know, minor car accidents, that sort of thing. It is built on sort of drama and adrenaline.
Well, Adam from Detroit left us this message about Cops.
I used to watch Cops a lot as a young kid. I don't know, my dad, who's been on both sides of the legal system, kind of said he didn't really like to watch, he's black, we're black, didn't like to watch people get arrested on TV. I didn't think anything of it until later. I think I heard on somewhere on NPR that the police will search your car for 2 hours and edit that 2 hours down to a crime that looks like it takes 45 seconds. And I just think, you know, they do it with black and Mexican people all the time. It's ridiculous. I applaud them for canceling the show.
Thanks, Adam, for sharing that. Henry, here's a tweet from Jamie. Jamie says, look, I didn't even know Cops was still playing current shows. I thought they were all reruns. How has it lasted so long, Henry?
Yeah, so Cops started in 1989, and it was on for over 31 years, over 1,000 episodes, and it got to the point where, yeah, a lot of people didn't know it was still on,
I didn't.
but people were still watching. Yeah. I think that speaks to also kind of the segmentation of the TV market. But I mean, Cops is a cheap show to produce, and it kind of boiled down television into its most compact parts, right? It had drama, it had suspense, it had resolution. But like Adam left in his message, like he said, what a lot of people didn't realize is that there was actually signed agreements with c between Cops producers on the TV show and the law enforcement agencies they worked with, where they did get final cut. So you would see things like he described. That's actually a scene from our podcast where a long arrest that could take an hour gets cut down to maybe a minute of a drug bust. And then in the end, we found out those weren't even actual drugs. The tests they showed on TV weren't working.
Wow.
And you know, you have this nationally broadcast arrest that shows an innocent person getting thrown in jail for the sake of entertainment.
Okay, so police being made to look like these heroes, and one of the things too is they didn't really seem to make a lot of mistakes. And one of the narratives I remember from watching the show was that they were just these good public servants. I used to watch it as a kid with my dad, and I just remember, oh, police are all good. This is great. They're here to protect us. And that
Yeah, you'll
you're saying
often
is
see the
probably not
segment
always the
end.
case.
Exactly. Often a segment will end with, you know, a supervisor coming and patting the officer on the back and saying, you know, one more bad guy off the streets. And that sends a message. And it especially sends a message when the police on that show are often doing things that are violent, that are racist, that are unconstitutional. They're often violently searching people before they've even been detained or arrested. And it sends a message about what police should be doing and what good policing looks like.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Henry Malofsky. He's a producer of the podcast series Running from Cops. Also with us is Soraya Nadia McDonald, culture critic for The Undefeated. Jose tweets to us. He says, filming an arrest or a traffic infraction for people's entertainment is awful. How would you like it if the cops showed up to your house with a camera crew trying to get something sensational for TV? It's embarrassing and wrong. Now, Soraya, in 2016, Cops went to Salinas, California. Here's what Officer Scott Sutton told their producers after making an arrest.
People don't know why we do things the way that we do. I think that it's important that people understand why we're coming across pretty aggressive at times. And generally, once we explain why we're doing things the way we're doing them, people tend to understand and tend to be more on our side.
And a member of our 1A text club said pretty much what I was feeling, that, you know, cops were made to look less scary and seem like good protectors. Was that actually the case, Soraya?
No, it's not. You know, it's not just that they're made to sort of be these swashbuckling heroes of their communities. You know, one of the things that we find, right, because this is such, it's usually condensed down to the most sort of violent and dramatic interactions. You know, there is this huge emphasis on, you know, the police as the guardians of society, right? As they're the sheepdogs, and, you know, the general public is the sheep, and they're protecting us from the wolves, right? And if we get mad at them, it's because we can't tell the difference between sheepdogs and wolves. I think that's actually a fairly prevalent attitude within policing. But that's also not true.
Yeah. We are talking with culture critic for The Undefeated, Soraya Nadia McDonald. And we'll say goodbye now to Running from Cops producer Henry Malofsky. You can find his work wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining us, Henry.
Thanks so much.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Stay with us.
Support for NPR and the following message come from DuckDuckGo. Do you want the same internet but more privacy? DuckDuckGo can help. They help millions of people like you get privacy online without any trade-offs. With one download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers. DuckDuckGo. Privacy simplified.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Actress Tracee Ellis Ross is used to people talking about her age a lot. And she's okay with whatever people say.
I'm 47 years old, and I'm the most comfortable in my skin I've ever been. What, when we go back to being 22? No, thank you.
The Black-ish star on Confronting an Ageist World. Listen and subscribe to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're talking about how the police are portrayed on television. And we have two new voices joining us now. Stephen Thrasher is an assistant professor and chair of social justice and reporting at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Professor Thrasher, hi.
Hi.
And Glenn Mazzara was an executive producer of The Shield, which aired on FX from 2002 to 2008. He's also the former showrunner for The Walking Dead. Glenn, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Glenn, why do people love cop dramas so much? What's the obsession?
Well, I think they're inherently dramatic. You immediately have a conflict there. The stories just happen on the street. You don't have to set up a lot. You know, I think it's life and death stakes in a cop show. There's usually a puzzle, some type of mystery. It makes for good TV dramas, and it has since the beginning.
Well, The Shield, Glenn, it follows a rogue group of officers that are working in an experimental division of the Los Angeles Police Department. Now, do you think the show holds up amid the Black Lives Matter protests?
I will say this. I would say yes and no. I would say yes, it does, in the sense that it does show police brutality. It does show cops reveling in their power and getting away with it and no one holding them accountable. So I would say that was a very prescient viewpoint, because a lot of cop shows don't do that. We had no interest in making our cops heroes. We really tried to show the full picture. I would say, though, that what doesn't hold up is, and we recognized this at the time, that show was written by a group for predominantly of white middle-aged guys.
Right.
And, you know, when we tried to make our staff more inclusive and diversify, this was, 15 years ago, there was a systemic pushback in from different groups, agents, executives. You didn't have an infrastructure in Hollywood that addresses diversity and inclusion within a writer's room. So I would say, and we realized that at the time, and we, were trying to do our best. Mm-hmm. So I would say that if The Shield was being done today, it would really have to include voices from the communities that are being affected by the police. You know, I think the prism was too narrow. And it probably, there are stories that don't hold up today. But 15 years ago, we gave it our best shot.
Jeremy emails us. He says, the reason the crime drama has been around since radio days is that it involves episodic, self-contained stories each week. As a result, viewers tend to side with the police and prosecutors because they are the recurring characters and the guest cast cycles through each week. Soraya, The Shield was unlike police procedural shows like Law and Order and Criminal Minds or NCIS, which each show stands alone rather than it building sort of episode to episode. Can you talk about the structure of these shows, these police procedurals? I know they normally have these good guy versus bad guy narratives, and we know that the good guys are going to solve the crime at the end. But is this predictable morality part of what makes them so popular?
Yeah, I think so, right? It's a very comfortable genre of television, particularly if you're looking for something, where you basically, the structure, how these acts are going to play out. so it doesn't demand a ton from the viewers. And the other thing is that, there has been a sort of blueprint established with Dragnet, where you had this really close relationship between Hollywood and law enforcement, basically resulting in sort of decades of, you know, what some folks call copaganda, because, you know, what you see, as your listener rightly pointed out, mm-hmm. is that the folks you see every week, you know, who you sort of develop these relationships with as an audience member, are the prosecutors, are law enforcement. And, you know, who changes every week? Who,
yeah.
You know, who are the people, you know, who we don't actually get to see, you know, really any other parts of their lives? What happens sort of before and after? You know, it's the people who are being sort of hunted and arrested.
Well, we'll have to say goodbye to Soraya Nadia McDonald. She's a culture critic for The Undefeated. Soraya, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Professor Thrasher, you covered police and protests in both Ferguson and Baltimore several years ago. What was your biggest takeaway from those experiences?
Thinking back on that time and now, I'm recalling how a lot of the experiences that people were having then felt unique, that people were being tear gassed and whatnot. It now feels quite ubiquitous, and we're seeing people deal with that all over the country. And it's a big reason why I'm extremely critical of these shows. And I've been excited to see that the Black Lives Matter movement has moved the conversation beyond thinking about bad apples or rogue cops or bad divisions, but thinking that policing itself as an institution is unacceptable and should be abolished. And I was thinking when you were talking earlier about the pilot of The Shield and asking why people like these shows, I don't think they even have a chance to like them. I often think ideology is that which you don't have a choice not to think about. And the ubiquity of policing in American society, that cities spend 30, 35, 40% of their budgets on policing, and just the ubiquity of these shows, NCIS, Law and Order, Cops, Life, PD, don't even give people a chance to think about whether or not they like them. It's just what's mm-hmm. there, and it's so ubiquitous, you are forced to confront it whether you want to or not.
We also heard from so many of you about one show in particular, The Wire. One listener told us, I'm married to a captain in D.C.'s police department, and he tells me The Wire gets it right. Professor Thrasher, what do you make or what should we make of shows like The Shield and The Wire that are showing police brutality in an effort to actually accurately show police work?
Well, clearly they don't have an effect on reducing police brutality. The police in the United States kill 1,000 to 1,200 people a year. They'll kill three or four today. They killed three or four yesterday. They'll kill three or four tomorrow. So I don't think that depicting them and showing what they do in these fictional settings is particularly helpful. What I think is very dangerous is that the central premise of the existence of the show also is predicated on the fact that the police have to exist, that we have to have these institutions, and that it's been really heartening to see in the past few weeks people have been doing prison abolition work and work around defunding the police for a long time, but it's really coming into the public consciousness. This idea that, you know, the people think that the police spend most of their time dealing with violent, quote unquote, crime, and it might be 4% of what they do. It might be 1% in certain cities. But these shows give the idea that this is happening all the time, and that's mm-hmm. why the police are very necessary. And so that is one of the reasons why law enforcement agencies are very supportive of shows like Cops and Life PD. That they give in-kind donations mm-hmm. Of equipment and personnel and whatnot to productions to shoot with. It's why Dragnet was so supported by the LAPD, because ultimately, even when these shows are showing the quote-unquote bad apples or mm-hmm. the darker side of policing, they're still predicated on the idea that the police must exist and that resources and thinking should be going into accepting that rather than challenging, you know, this idea of crime and thinking about why are we so fixated on what these shows depict as crime, and what if the resources of our society, financially, governmentally, but also culturally, mm-hmm. were going towards things that would give people what they needed so that this kind of dramatic scene was not necessary in the first place.
What do you think about this tweet here, Glenn? It comes from a listener. They say, shaming and canceling cop shows isn't working. We have a simmering and boiling society ready to explode. Dialogue, decent, civilized dialogue allows learning and empathy. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I think, I'm not sure, you know, I could understand how some cop shows are being removed because they have, because people are re-examining them in the current light. I could see that. I think there's a responsibility that all artists now have to examine the images that we're putting out there. And that's going to require the dialogue. The dialogue that we are having is going to affect what shows are being developed, what storytellers are being brought in, how those shows are shaped. I think, you know, Hollywood is very slow to react. It's going to take a long time, especially when there's a pandemic. It's difficult. You know, nobody can shoot anything right now. So I think, you know, this dialogue is necessary. And in a year or two, when these shows are developed and completely shot and airing, I think that will move the needle further. So that dialogue is important.
Yeah.
But by canceling certain things, it's forcing Hollywood to look at itself, take a hard look at itself and say, what are we doing? What are we putting out there? And that's necessary. So that's a necessary step.
When making The Shield, did you get any pushback to certain storylines because of their complexity?
We were on FX, and we were FX's first drama. They were very supportive. They did not want things that were gratuitous, and they made us really examine what we were putting out there. The pushback we got was from the LAPD. LAPD does support shows like Dragnet and other shows in LA. Since we were inspired by the Rampart scandal, we were not allowed to use the term LAPD. Our cops never say LAPD. They say police. There's a fictional neighborhood called Farmington. They say Farmington, mm-hmm. or they just say, you know, PD. We were not allowed to use the LAPD badges. They're trademarked. Our badges are on the wrong side of the uniforms. you know, LAPD threatened legal action against Fox. And so we had a number of things where we were not supported at first by the LAPD.
Interesting. We are talking with Glenn Mazzara, former executive producer of The Shield, and Stephen Thrasher, writer and professor at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. More from our guests and from you in just a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Facebook. In response to COVID-19, people around the world are coming together to help one another. Facebook's community help feature is making that easier. From delivering groceries to neighbors to donating to a local fundraiser or food pantry, community help provides a place where people can offer or request support in their area. Learn more at facebook.com/COVID support.
Parents, ever wish you had a coach or a fairy godmother for when your kids hit you with those really tough questions?
Well, NPR's Life Kit has tons of episodes to help you through the hardest parenting moments.
Listen and subscribe to Life Kit.
Now we're continuing our conversation about cops on TV. Professor Thrasher, I want to jump to a tweet that you put out back in 2018. You wrote, "The cop on TV is a very powerful form of social control, and I can't imagine a better one than Brooklyn Nine-Nine." Tell us more about what you meant.
So I had just seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I think, for the first time when I was at someone's home. And when I tweeted that, I think it had just gotten renewed or moved to a different network after it was going to be canceled and people were celebrating it. And when I was reading the news story about it, I'm looking at it now, a screenshot I made of it. Mm-hmm. There was a sidebar next to it of all the other trending news stories. And they included black faculty member pushing black graduates off stage, Nordstrom accusing teens of stealing, the Starbucks episode, which many of us probably remember, Native American students having the police called on them when they were on a college tour. And every story on the sidebar was all about these racial injustices and various forms of policing in some kind. And so I thought when I saw Brooklyn Nine-Nine and how popular it was, it made me really sad that there was so much celebration of this show, knowing, as I do from my research and my reporting, that three or four people were going to be killed that day by police and the next day and the next day. Mm. And it kind of pained entertained me to see how they're being made into very light, funny characters.
Yeah, and it's a comedy, right? People are supposed to laugh at this.
Yeah,
stuff.
It's a comedy, and so comedy is very powerful. You know, people called me a killjoy for saying this, but comedy is very powerful because it encourages you to laugh and to like these characters. And so when I saw the show for the first time, that was set in Brooklyn, where I used to live and where I'm visiting right now, and seeing that this interracial buddy comedy was making the police seem very lighthearted, it concerned me. I thought this was much more effective propaganda or propaganda than Dragnet or Cops, because it made people think, oh, there's not such a problem with police violence. Most cops are good and they're kind of funny and we should trust them. And it also made me start thinking about the ubiquity of the black cop, which I had just started noticing and had started thinking about since I was doing my reporting in Ferguson, Baltimore. I had started to realize that I was seeing the character of a black cop all over the place in TV shows and ads on the subway. That year, every time I went to the movies, back when we could go to movies, I realized there were at least one, if not two, trailers for movies with black cops. And so I started realizing that diversity was being used as a way to legitimize the police, as police were increasingly being called into question for the police violence, but also upholding the inequitable resources of the country violently and threatening people with guns to do so. The figure of the funny cop or the black cop, like Terry Crews and Audrey Brower play on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, was really being used as a way to legitimize the police and to make them seem palatable and to encourage people, you know, not to think as critically about the sidebar with all the news stories of all the horrific things that reflect not just formal policing, but the ways people are encouraged to police, the way that they are encouraged to call up the cops, you know, on a college tour or for someone bird watching and all these things. And I started realizing these are really tied together.
Yeah, let's talk a bit more about that portrayal of the black cop. First, let's listen to a bit of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. This is a piece from an episode in 2017 when Terry, which is the black officer played by Terry Crews, he's getting dinner with a white police officer who racially profiled him outside his house.
I'm really glad you set this up. I'm so sorry for what happened.
Oh, wow. I am really happy to hear that. I was thinking this conversation was going to go a lot differently.
No, no, no. It was an honest mistake. I mean, if I'd known you were a cop, I never would have treated you that way.
So you're sorry for not knowing I was a cop sooner?
Yeah.
And that's it?
Yeah.
But you shouldn't have treated me that way, whether I was a cop or not.
What do you mean?
I was just walking down the street. There's nothing suspicious or illegal about that.
Okay, but you and I both know you don't exactly look like you belong in that neighborhood.
I live there.
A listener messaged us as well. They said, I'm conflicted about Brooklyn Nine-Nine because it has one of the most diverse casts on a major network, and they did do an episode about police bias towards black folks. But I also want to see them address the issue going forward. I don't think it's a one-and-done topic. They have to keep engaging with the issues. So Glenn, I want to bring you in here. You know, when shows try to address the problems in policing, for example, Brooklyn Nine-Nine showing the main character getting racially profiled, as we just heard, even though he's a cop. Do you see these attempts as enough? Glenn, are you there?
You dropped out. Could you repeat that?
Oh, I was asking if so. You heard the clip we just played from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
You were saying about.
Was that enough? Or Professor Thrasher, jump in.
For making that attempt.
I don't think it is enough. And I hear what the listener's saying about wanting to see a more diverse cast, but I think that actually stops us from asking the bigger and more question is can this institution be reformed? Can this institution of policing, which was formed by slave patrols and antebellum times and continues to, as we've seen quite obviously in the past few weeks, continues to terrorize black people, people of color, and protesters, can it be rehabilitated or should it be abolished and should the resources be put other places? And I think when Brooklyn Nine-Nine or shows like this, you know, portray the cops in this way, it's a very powerful form of propaganda, that they show the police officers, show the black police officer dealing with two dual identities, one as a black person who's being profiled and also as the police officer. But predicated in that is the assumption that they must still be a police officer, that this force of policing must be protected, and that that is something that must exist in the society. And so then it legitimizes it, and it makes people think, yes, if there were just enough black cops, mm-hmm. maybe this would be okay, the institutions wouldn't be so harsh. But we know that that the institutions are still as harsh, they're still as racist, kind of regardless of who's running them. You know, we've seen in these protests around the country that many of them have happened in cities with black police chiefs or with black mayors, with blue mayors and governors. The institution of policing, regardless of the political party or the race of people running them, is still going to act in these ways. And so when we see someone like Terry Crews dealing with it, it's very effective. It works very dramatically. It probably makes people feel good, but it's still propaganda.
Glenn, I want to talk a little bit more about the figure of the black cop. You know, when black and brown actors are asked to play police officers, you know, when in real life people of color are being disproportionately affected by police brutality and mass incarceration, things like that, is this still harmful, or do we need to see this kind of representation on television?
Well, I think it has to be portrayed in a way in which you're showing those cops in conflict. We've seen even just this past week where, you know, African-American cops are saying that they still experience racism. And so, you know, if you look at that Brooklyn Nine-Nine clip, you know, one is that there's a cop and he's put in a dual situation. One is that he's obviously a black man who's suffering racism, but he's also suffering racism within his department. But then he's also a cop. There's part of what that clip also shows is the fraternal order of brotherhood that cops, you know, you're one of us or you're one of them. That's a line that's being handled in a comedy show. But I think, you know, you have to get to the conflict, the central conflict there, and put that on screen. I think part of what we may not have enough of that. You know, we tried to do that in The Shield. Certainly The Wire did that. Mm-hmm. I would invite shows to continue to do that and to explore that. I understand the whole thing about, you know, propaganda and all of that. But if you are doing a cop show, I think you have to pay attention and try to show the full humanity of what, you know, black cops are trying to do. They're trying to, you know, serve their community. They're trying to they believe in the ultimate mission of being a cop. And to try to put that on screen and try to explore that in all its complexity, I think is your job if you're making that kind of a show.
Glenn, how about representation when it comes to the people writing and producing the shows behind the scenes?
I think that has to be improved. I think, you know, right now there's only one cop show, SWAT, that has a black showrunner. You know, I just tweeted yesterday that if, you know, studios and networks really want to change, you know, we have many, many black writers in the Writers Guilds West and East, and we know who those writers are. They should be on a buying spree and bringing people in and recruiting people and trying to, you know, tell what stories and their takes on those stories. So Hollywood has not done a good job with being as inclusive as possible. It says it has. It likes to pat itself on the back. But there's a tremendous amount of work that people have to do to diversify and make their writers' rooms as inclusive as possible. You know, very often writers are marginalized within writers' rooms. This is a writer problem. Executives are not going to writers, to black writers, to develop this material, or Latino, or just non-white. We have a long way to go there. Yeah. We really do.
Glenn, a listener asked, and I'm curious, you know, why were you drawn to these stories? 30 seconds.
You know, I grew up in New York in the 70s, and, you know, the police were present. It was New York in the 70s was a dangerous time. And I just remember kind of that tone. I did a lot of studying about how cops feel. My brother is a former NYPD. Mm. I understand how cops do their jobs, and I wanted to work on a show that was accurately, as far as we could, portraying that and getting under it and not just glorifying it in a typical Dragnet way.
Well, we're glad to have you here today. Glenn Mazzara, a former executive producer of The Shield and former showrunner of The Walking Dead. Stephen Thrasher is writer and chair of social justice and reporting at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Thank you both. Today's producer was Gabrielle Healy. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.